financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you today?
I am great. We have a familiar guest with us.
We do. Dr. Bob, I enticed him to come back.
Familiar. What a great term. Hey, it's great to join you guys. Add a little, sports medicine, health and fitness style in your show, because the Money Doctor, hug your money, right?
Hug your money.
There you go.
That's right.
Really.
For those of you who don't know Dr. Bob and who haven't seen him in a little while, I just want to give him a brief introduction. But Dr. Bob is a radio host and author of hashtag Hey Sports Parents, which is a great guide if you want to mitigate or learn to manage the costs involved in high school age and other sports. A consultant, a speaker, a columnist. This is besides being a physician, of course. And in 2019... Yeah, and in 2019, he was inducted into the National Fitness Hall of Fame, which acknowledges his contributions to the sports medicine world. So I love that he takes time out to come and be with us. The last time he was coming on the show, we had to abort at the last second because he was called into surgery. So we had to change and say Dr. Bob got called into surgery as a consultant, I think, as an assist or something, right, in that surgery?
Yes.
Do you remember?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes, it was actually it was a patient of mine who was referred to somebody for some ankle procedures. So, yes. And then, schedules always change. So here we are. We're going to be catching up. And it's always great to be with you guys. And, a lot of people don't realize that the financial side of being a parent of a high-performance young boy or girl, being an athlete today who's looking at NIL situations where they're getting paid to be transferred from one school to another. It's nuts. And that's why we want to continue to help educate. You mentioned a lot of the pressures, and they are physical as well as mental in all of these areas when you're talking about any specific, whether you're a weekend warrior or you're a might be the name of the next book, might be Hey Sports Grandparents.
Well, that's, it's a good sequel. Yeah, for those of you listening who don't know what NIL is, name, image, likeness.
Forever, an amateur athlete was an amateur. So an athlete, even though the schools might be making tens of millions of dollars, think of football and basketball, those are the two big sports. With the addition of these particular athletes. But if an athlete wanted to sign a picture or sell a hat or be involved at all in the world of money, they were suspended very aggressively forever. All of a sudden, over the past couple of years, there was this change where the term student athlete was actually a legal term. Because again, if the athlete had injuries during their career, it's years later, they're not covered. The college was off the hook, whereas if you were someone selling peanuts in the stands of within a union, you might have had insurance. So the whole thing blew up with the positive side on the left that athletes would be compensated, and the chaos on the right, where you have transfers of athletes all over the place, and it's turned the world of March Madness upside down. It's added tremendous pressure. And your expertise, which is being able to counsel parents or colleges or individuals, coaches, on how do we deal with this madness of so much money in so many different areas, and the fact that if your son or daughter is on a traveling team or a club team, you're spending tens of thousands of dollars a year. And as the sports doctor, in my new venture where I'm a consultant, I'm going to be a quarterback where I am surrounded with 20 or 30 experts like you in fitness, in the mental side, in nutrition, in sports performance, in parenting, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and be able to counsel people on a plan to deal with these tremendous pressures. You know, when you're watching the Olympics, you're seeing a 20-year-old. They've been involved since they're nine. So, and again, that's why I welcome your expertise when it comes to counseling some of these parents who are facing ice time. You know, one of my real subspecialties forever is figure skating.
That's right.
I can't believe we just celebrated the 15th year of my young kid growing up here in Illinois. Evan Lysacek became the Olympic gold medalist in figure skating.
Wow. One more time, tell people who don't know about this individual.
Evan Lysacek, 2010 Olympic gold medal figure skating Olympian. And he was 10 years old when I put orthotics in his skates, in my specialty. So that ride that we were on with this whole world of the pressure of these 10, 11, 12-year-olds is a very, very important one. And there's both a mental and a physical side, like we talked about. Is your son or daughter in the best shoe? What's the history of foot and leg problems? Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I sound like I'm hosting the radio show.
Let me ask our co-host Jess for a second, who has children, because I don't have children, so I don't have the sports thing. What's it like in your household? Do your kids do sports? Can you give us any insight?
It's very expensive, even at like 6 and 7. There's a different sport like each quarter. And, you know, it just adds up. You know, every sport, like with the hockey, they've got to get all the stuff for it. The soccer, the same thing. So you just hope that they want to stick with it. Otherwise, you know, you're spending a bunch of money.
Well, this is very interesting. You precisely, which is, this is so early, where again, we start to see attention being paid, including specific sports. But here's my pearl for the day, Jess. You ready? Here's the two exercises you want your children to include forever.
Okay.
Number one, strengthen their feet and ankles.
Mm-hmm.
Rubber bands are a great way. And two is work on balance. And these are the two areas you want to add. Whatever we want to be doing safely, we want to work. And my famous ex-sports therapist, Bob Guida, made such a big deal out of this. Again, whether you were the best athlete in the world or a grandmother. Because, you know, ankle problems is such a consistent problem. And many times your foot mechanics have something to do with it. So if you have a fun way where they're playing, when they learn how to use rubber bands and they learn how to do some balance while you're playing catch, et cetera, Guida loved mini trams. Now imagine yourself balancing on a mini tram with your catcher's glove on.
You got to tell me what a mini
trampoline.
Tram is.
Yes, a mini.
Yes,
so the world of trampolines that we, yes, but trampolines that we all know are such fun and whatever are great areas to work on balance. And every time you create imbalance, telling grandma, hold on and stand on one foot a few times a day, work on balance. This is a very big deal. Falls are the number one time problem with super seniors. And lower extremity problems are a big deal when your child starts to play 10 days a week.
Just to jump in, I was just going to say, I know some people that are getting on in years, and they're saying their physical therapists are saying the same thing. Use a therapy band, do these exercises, practice balance.
But learn technique. Learn technique.
I wrote
an article in 2020 about pickleball. And it's the fastest growing sport. Now, people who play tennis in their 60s and 70s have played tennis since they're kids.
Right.
They don't just take it up. Pickleball, you got 60, 70-year-olds thinking they could jump on the court. There's an explosion of problems. So we tell seniors, you don't have to be a champion. But again, you want to be doing some strengthening and make sure you're in condition. Pickleball is physical.
Sure.
You're moving around. And so again, whether you're a super senior or you are a 6 and 7-year-old, you want to stay out of trouble, include balance, and, you know, understand what you do. So if you go to a physical therapist, Athletico for years has offered it for free. They'll show parents a good program that their kids could do at home. And then you can many times follow the same thing yourself. These are some of the things that I've been talking about on the radio. I don't know, 40 years, give or take a few weeks.
Jess, you had a question.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Dr. Bob. Yeah.
Just to throw back what you were saying in the beginning about March Madness, I know that there was a player from USC this week that tore her ACL. So while they won, which was great, she's going to be out for the rest of the season. And I know you're bringing up feet and ankles. I hear about ACLs all the time. Is that a super common one as well?
Well, it's a great question. I am a foot specialist, sports podiatrist. And 50% at least of the young girls I've seen over the years, whether they were volleyball players, soccer players, world class, or kids in the neighborhood, 50% of the girls have knee trouble, and I'm a podiatrist. Mm. That's the importance of the relationship. There's always been 5-6 to 1 knee concerns, female to male, because anatomically, besides hormonally, but anatomically, as a young girl is getting older, she starts to go through puberty, her hips widen. Many times there's more of an angle down to the knee. And there is a tremendous relationship. The foot and ankle are complex mechanisms. And whether you have a high arch, whether you have flat feet, all sorts of variables, whether your mother and grandmother had bunions, foot mechanics are inherited. So often we neglect it unless there's problems, but this is something very important. Knee trouble is always, you know, they happen. ACL is a major ligament in the knee. It's the most famous knee injury by far. And then you have Lindsey Vonn. The great Lindsey Vonn, the Olympic skier. She's such an example. I don't know, persistence, superstardom, over 40 years old. I don't know how many knee surgeries, you know, knee replacement. Olympic ski superstar, just won a silver medal. But a great example of the knee concern when we talk about the kind of, especially in female sports, and this explosion of knee concerns. But she's a great example of persistence. And I had to give her a shout out for this incredible sports medicine story.
Hey, Lindsey Vonn. A shout out from Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor and Dr. Bob Weil.
Yeah. Thank you.
Getting it done. All right. Thank you so much.
All right. We want to hear that story, but let's do that when we come back. In the meantime, Dr. Frances Ram, can I get your phone number?
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram, and special guest Dr. Bob on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram, and our special guest, Dr. Bob.
That's right. We're back with Dr. Bob Weil, complete with props, flat foot, arched foot.
Yes. And,
you know, I have to
say,
I always
had it. Go ahead.
People wait too long, in my opinion, myself included, until you have pain to correct what might be a slight difference.
Well,
can you talk about that?
Yes. You know, there are three areas I talk about on my radio show, really. One's awareness, two's education, three is action. Awareness of what the heck we're talking about, which is the feet affect all parts of the body. So any persistent lower extremity concern, low back, hips, knees, whether it's arthritis because you've been wearing the joints out, or a chronic problem with a 15-year-old that's always having trouble with her knees or shin splints, and she's on cross country, and we're saying, wow, it's those pronated feet. The feet ankles are complex mechanisms, and there's terms that a lot of people hear, which is pronation, supination, and they are common terms. It's the whole world of the shoe industry, and they're normal motions. And pronation allows you to absorb shock. Every time you land on your heel, you generate about half your weight. Once you start passing over the foot, your foot adapts to the ground. Think you're walking on the beach or you're walking barefoot on the lawn. Your foot accommodates to the surface and your whole leg rotates inward. And that's part of pronation chain. So if your foot collapses excessively, you roll your knee in excessively, a la knee problems. Once you bear weight, the job of the foot is like a lever spring, push you off. The high arch foot, as a rule, is more efficient in pushing off. But if the foot and ankle is rigid, we have problems. In a dancer, man, the balls of my feet, they're always a problem because I'm on the balls of my feet. My back's killing me. And the challenge in dance is we had to be very specific with what kind of orthotic. But ironically, I mentioned Lysacek before. He was on Dancing with the Stars when he won the Olympics. And a couple of the dancers, man, we had them in dress orthotics, color-coded, for their three-inch heels.
That's right.
Again, is the understanding that, you know, my grandmother had knee problems. My grandfather always had arthritis. They always had high arches. Should I talk to a podiatrist? Yes. Just the type of shoe could be a key point. Now, when you add dance, a lot of dance is barefoot. In some instances, other times it's ballet. So the tremendous stress on the whole lower extremity. So the understanding that this stuff could be connected is why we want to add our two cents.
Well, it makes total sense that things would start from the foot up, but it does bring me back to the idea of money. Sorry to say it, as the money doctor, it's always on my mind, right? But the expense involved in things like custom orthotics. Or the equipment, like Jess's kids, you know, some of the stats are football helmets, pads, and cleats from $500 to $1,000. I mean, hockey, baseball, football, track, all really expensive sports, right? Ice time, like you were talking about for ice skating. So, you know, what happens for parents who are faced with this?
I think they become educated into the fact that it's important to see if there's a recurrent injury problem. They want to be paying attention. They want to be able to communicate with their son or daughter if they're hurting. Again, that serious young son or daughter, they've seen a big problem with these young kids admitting they've got a head problem. They're getting headaches. They can't sleep. They don't feel good. The concussion world is exploded. There is, everybody listening, there is no safe tackle football, period.
That's right.
This is something you need to educate. Yourself on regarding, again, the expenses. Now, if it's a medical concern, whether it's orthotics or some sort of medical care, of course, there's going to be tremendous priority. But what about if it's a traveling team or if it's a club team? So we want the parent or coach to be able to have the counseling on what's the best way to. I tell every serious athlete, if you become a mom or dad and you know how important sports was to you, talk to the money doctor about trying to be prepared later on, whether your son or daughter is shooting for a scholarship or whatever. At least educate yourself because it is expensive. Yes, it is. And believe me, there's a lot of pressure. The more talented your son or daughter is, the more this we see eating disorders in young dancers or skaters or ballerinas. What do you mean you didn't lose that 20 pounds? Wondering why this kid is in all sorts of problems mentally, with their mental health. So, again, the pressure, the financial pressure, it's big.
Well, I think, you know, everything from just nutritional supplements, right, that the kids might need better diets or nutritional supplements. Yeah. Those
Great
are expensive.
Point.
Training, coaching.
Well, this is where you know, this is where
club
the
and travel teams you mentioned.
Yeah, this is where the sports doctor's in comes in.
Yeah.
This is what I've done on my radio show for 100 years, which I have surrounded myself by these experts and so many contributed to my book. Many, like you, have been guests, whether they're sports psychologists, they're nutritionists. I have sports pharmacists, sports cardiologists, Dr. Weil, who do I see? Who do I talk to? Where should my son go to school? Should he pay for a pitching coach? You know, oh my gosh, a third of Tommy John surgery, Francis and Jess,
really?
Are done on teenagers.
Wow.
Think about it. And again, as the quarterback, to be able to talk to a parent, and they can email me at drrwildsportsdoctor@yahoo.com. I have people email me because I have a segment on the show where we talk and include some emails where we might talk about, all of these situations regarding, should my son have a quarterback coach? What about supplements? the key area, R.D. Kate Nutrition, who's contributed to my book, Kate Davis, sports nutritionist, consults with teams, parents, coaches. You know, my daughter's a gymnast. You know, she's got to pay big attention to nutrition. And then you know how much hype there is out there. You got every
and lack
commercial.
Of regulation, right?
Drugs.
Yep.
Do you realize that over 50% of young athletes who were adolescents, listening parents and coaches, over 50% depend on over-the-counter pain medicines, the ibuprofens, the Aleves? Well, you know, if she doesn't take one Aleve twice a day, man, those heels are hurting her, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we want to be able to pay attention to this. Regarding, you know, again, youth sports is a like $100 million a year or more business. It's very, very big business. Of course, there's a big financial side. Who thought of the world of sports pharmacy?
Boy.
And then Jessica Biel, who in the last year or two has been a guest of mine. And that whole area of sports pharmacy, again, being able to find someone to consult with regarding you know, whether my son or daughter should be taking this, this, or this, and all this Gatorade and all these commercials. And, you know, what about the diet stuff now, Dr. Bob? Oh, my gosh, what's going on with that? Or diabetes?
Well, you know, even if you get these kids through healthy, right, and they're not, and they're watching their diet and they're not on medicines and they're doing great, let's suppose the best scenario. You get these youth kids, right? You get the youth kids. You get these young kids through the high school years or through the grade school years of sports, and now they're looking to play collegiate sports at a collegiate level. Now we're talking about real money, and we're not just talking about not that the other stuff wasn't real money, right? It can cost you thousands of dollars just to get your kid into a camp off season, but just in terms of recruitment costs, right? Recruitment costs, things like creating a highlight reel, maybe attending a showcase event or hiring consultants, right? This stuff is really expensive.
Oh,
will
yes,
you talk about what
now
you see?
Yes, well, now along the new challenge of that NIL, that name, image, and likeness.
Likeness, yeah.
And the ability that, again, there might be a local car dealer who wants to sign your son if he'll go to university, wherever it is, and getting $1 million. You know, I had a guest on my show a few years ago from the National Publicity Summit, this great organization that meets a few times a year with Bradley Communications. It's all about meet the media and all of these different types of topics. Yeah. And they were talking about the fact that 33% or more of multimillionaire professional athletes were broke after 10 years. Mm-hmm. I said, wow. Is that possibly true? And it was, again, this high end, maybe an athlete signing a contract for $100 million has got who knows what goes on in their life. Lucky them. I think that's fantastic. But that statistic knocked me over that it was even close. There was that kind of challenge. I won't say ignorance. I'll say challenge in that athlete, that young athlete, their family, and the world of multi-million, you know, there was a baseball player just signed for $700 million in 15 years. Went to the Mets, man.
Can I ask a quick question here?
From the Yankees.
Say you're a parent listening to our show today, and I'm wondering, and I don't want to put either of you on the spot, but I'm wondering how much of it for winning these championships in Olympics or events like that is just talent, and how much of it is how well off the family is? Because if you've got two kids that have got equal talent and you have one that can afford all these things you're talking about, from a sports nutritionist to a physician to all the extra things they need, and one that does not have the money to do that, it feels like as a parent, I would be thinking, oh, you can't even compete unless you have some kind of extraordinary child.
Well, it's a great question. And the idea is, of course, there are two areas everybody cares about. Number one, can I prevent problems? Can I prevent this epidemic of overuse injuries, with these kids? And two, can they have a good mental time? Can they stay out of these kinds of pressures? So there's no doubt about it. There are advantages. This is why we want parents and coaches to be educated. And organizations like the National Association of Parents, one of my guests that working with parents in sports from England, Gordon McClelland, these organizations for parents and coaches, iSport 360, to be able to educate parents about what's available. There's no doubt about it that there is an advantage, but talent is, of course, a tremendous advantage. And again, staying out of trouble. So the advantage of a well-off, there's no doubt about it. But at the same time, there's all sorts of expertise available. There are all sorts of organizations if people will get educated. And this is what we try to add to the mix, where we have different experts on from these areas that can be available to be helpful.
I'm going to jump in too and just say that, Jess, I hear you loud and clear about that sort of class divide when you can't afford this. And I'm going to agree with Dr. Bob that one of the things that that people worry about, that parents worry about, is if my kid gets injured, can I afford these extra medical costs? Can I take the time off work to care for them? Can I pay for the kinds of things they will need? And that's sometimes a deterrent. But I want to reference in closing here, Dr. Bob's book, hashtag Hey Sports Parents, because not only will that give you a link to him where he can maybe tell you some of the free things or some of the available assistance that you can get financially to level that playing field, which I think is what you're talking about. Talent is absolutely important, but as the money doctor, I'm going to say, yeah, I think that people make their decisions based on what they think they will be able to afford or their perceived fear of unchecked expenses going forward. You know, we can't afford a sports camp. We can't afford the ice time. And there are ways around it. And Dr. Bob and I can work together to help anybody who's interested in that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Hashtag Hey Sports Parents. Still around on Amazon. My fantastic Hall of Fame volleyballer, Sharky Zartman, was my co-author with that book. Again, my show is The Sports Doctor, and it's on live every Wednesday. We have the adventure of live radio on BBS Radio. But again, you know, this whole world of youth sports, the idea of parents to be educated regarding staying out of trouble, being prepared, including the doctors, the pediatricians, the other individuals who are involved, and the ability to find out different types of information to, again, stay safe and be smart and be educated.
Yes, thank you.
You know, what's more important than these types of areas? So we're always glad to be included, glad that you're on the team of experts that could be helpful. And every once in a while, we try to stop in on the Money Doctor with you and Jess. And I commend you guys, for adding some of this information. So it's great to be here.
Thank you for coming on. Well, hopefully you'll come back again. This is Dr. Bob Weil, the sports doctor, affectionately known as Dr. Bob.
And thank Francis, you. Can we get your phone number as well for a link to you?
You betcha. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can visit hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented. Financial coaching and more information at hugyourmoney.com.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I am doing well, and I always love to see when we have a full house. We've got guests today.
We do have guests today. That's those lovely people that, if you're watching this on video, are in the corner of my screen here. And Angela and Mike, and their last name is Torville. And I will tell you, just for curiosity's sake, they aren't married, at least not to each other. and we're going to get the scoop on them. But I want to say that they're both from Annie Mac Home Mortgage. And between them, they have, they don't look old enough to do it, but between them, about 50 years of experience in this business. Mm. And so it's surprising when you hear that number, isn't it?
Right, yes.
So I've invited them here today because we found some synergy in the way that we like to work with the public. And although no one ever believes us when we say this, it has to do with actually doing the right job, actually caring for the people that we advise. And then because of that, building a long career with lots of referrals, et cetera. So in order for people to get to know you a little bit, the way I've gotten to know you slightly, I would love it if you would share your family history with us and just give us some idea of how you are related and how you got into this business. Who wants to start?
Would you like to go first?
Sure.
Okay, glad to volunteer you.
Well, I met Mike's amazing son when I was 17 years old, and he wouldn't leave, so I'm here still. Mike has been a very critical piece of my career ever since the beginning. He was, I don't want to take too much of your story, but he was running countrywide offices over here in Western Mass, ended up, introducing me to another mortgage company, actually, and me in there. And that sort of started, the kickoff, I guess, away from, depository bank work and into the lending world. And I've never left that. So that's in a nutshell.
Well, it's so funny because now I'm going to talk about her. We're going to talk about each other. Isn't that the way that works?
Sometimes.
But no, Angela has done a phenomenal job over the years when she first started as a receptionist, a loan officer assistant, a processor, loan officer, and now branch manager. So she's progressed through all different positions, given her a really wonderful perspective of the ins and outs of everything, is in a restaurant, behind the kitchen and out front. She's got a perspective of both sides of this thing. And where my experience comes in managing offices years ago, I used to manage the underwriters and processors and loan officers. That helps tremendously because you're not just a salesperson. You start to see what goes on in the back room, so to speak. And I think that does give both of us a very good perspective. And you talked about an approach. It's one thing to say, yeah, we really care about our customers. It's another thing to demonstrate it every day in what you do. And I think that's really what I think differentiates Angela. And I'm going to say, I left the business for a little bit. I was thinking about Angela had talked to me about coming back in. And honestly, it's her infectious, contagious enthusiasm that drew me back in. And I joined Annie Mac. And honestly, what we saw is that this is exciting stuff. So, yeah, here we are working together after all these years. So it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I just want to say Angela is also the mom of four children and a dog. Right? Jess,
why not?
Our co-host Jess has how many children? Three?
Yes. And let me just interject for a minute. Okay. So the son would never leave. Does that mean you married the son and this is your father?
I did. Yeah, I did.
Okay. There we go. Okay. Got it. All right. Yep. So that's your dad-in-law. All right. Very cool.
So anyway, that gives you the background of being very human in a very inhuman environment of dollars. And that's what I think we share. So I asked you for some bullet points. I was like, hey, we could talk forever. We could have done a show just in our first conversation, right? And you sent me some brief bullet points. Like, we could talk about any of this stuff. And they ranged from credit tips and tricks to house hacking. Okay. And in the middle was like, first time home buyers, VA loans, things that people always talk about. So I'm sure that we're going to do more than one show because there's just way too much information for us to cover in a show like this. But I wanted to ask you specifically, if you don't mind talking about, I definitely want to talk about first-time homebuyers and VA if we have time, but house hacking. Can you explain house hacking and teach us something about it?
Well, that's a show in itself too.
Well, it might be this one. Let's see.
Yeah, well, there's a few ways house hack. So we could follow TikTok and what they tell us to do. And it's buy a house, live there for a year, and go get another one. It's that easy. It's not. So to just hit on where that falls flat, because on a daily, I overcome TikTok videos, and house hacking is a big one. Mm-hmm. And where it falls flat is when you're getting a mortgage and you're preparing and planning for your future accumulation of properties, there is no hack. It's planning. And so that's what we do. We sit with the client, we plan them. And the big thing that isn't discussed is the amount of assets you need in order to purchase that next property, as well as reserve additional funds left over after you purchase. Mm-hmm. And when I get into having to have 6 months of a mortgage payment in additional funds, it always falls flat. It falls flat. I come across lenders who prepare their clients to house hack and get that secondary home. They're not preparing them. We actually just saved one that we'll be closing in a couple weeks from bad advice.
Yep.
So house hacking is specific and personalized, I think, to you and your goals in the future with real estate. So that's just a real simple touch on what that could be.
Jess, you had a question?
I guess I don't really understand what house hacking is. Like, everybody would buy a second house if they had the money to do. How is that a hack? Like,
so it's all about the occupancy of the home. Are you going to live in it, or are you going to use it as an investment? And there's no real black or white law or rule or guideline that says how long you have to live in a home before you can move out and go occupy another. So when you're buying multifamilies, if you occupy that multifamily, you can put as low as 3.5% down or 5% down. If you do not live in that property, you could be looking at 20 or 25% down. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge difference. And so the hack is the least amount of money up front as possible to start to accumulate properties. And so it all comes down to occupying, if you will, or not.
And there's more to it.
The hack is to occupy for a year and then go get another one.
But would you have enough equity in that house to be able to afford another whole mortgage? Like, most people, I would think, aren't able to do that unless you already have money going into it.
Correct.
Right.
So there's a lot of shortcomings with people that just listen to these quick house hacking things, mm-hmm. because you have to look at the income that you're qualifying with. And what income can you use? Are you filing your taxes properly? When I'm dealing with specifically a first-time home buyer who comes to me to house hack, first we stop and we say, why do you want multifamily? And if the reasons are because I want to own real estate, you know, I want to own a ton and let that be my retirement plan or how I make my living, we step back and we really look 5 to 10 years ahead and how can we position you now to do that?
Yep.
And then a lot of times we start to develop a team. And this is just how I consult. I do find people after they've bought in that first home come to me thinking they're going to get the other one and use equity within 12 months. I have 3 clients right now I had to get bad news to. And I have to tell them the sweet spot's 5 years if our homes keep appreciating like they are. So equity is a thing we have to consider, available assets and leftover assets, and also qualifying for 2 mortgage payments with your income. It's technical, it's specific. Everything's personalized to the person and what they want to do and how we can move them forward. And it takes a team most of the time. So hacking is a very bad word. It's just a trigger word, I think. Mm-hmm. It gets your attention. The attention I like to have is a consultation and really plan, you know, for now in the future.
You can almost look at an obvious consequence of this too, right? If you don't live, if it's not an appreciating time, you're going to be over leveraged on properties with the maximum mortgage, the highest mortgage payment, and upside down, not on one, but on a few properties. And that's a dangerous position to be in without planning, like Angela said. So certainly it has to be thought out ahead of time. What could go wrong?
Yeah.
Be careful.
Oh, I don't have to plan for that. Yeah.
Let me think. Oh, I don't know, the 2007, 2008 housing bubble. Oh, gee. So there's lots more to this, too, about house hacking. You know, some people want to stay in a property for a year because they think they're going to avoid capital gains tax because it was owner occupied. Some people do this well using a 1031 exchange, but that takes exactly what Angela and Mike are both saying. That takes planning. You have to identify that property in advance. But that's a way to roll one property into another if they're like properties. We could go on for an hour about 1031 mm-hmm. exchanges, mm-hmm. but they have to be like properties and they have to be either identified within 90 days or there is a way to do it afterwards, but it's more complicated. But the point I think we're all trying to make is, you know, everybody is, you know, seduced by the idea of owning lots of real estate, especially in a scary market. And the appeal of a TikTok video that just says, this is really easy, just here's your hack. Okay, we're not talking about plastic covers for your bowls in the kitchen and here's a hack. We're talking about your life. This can drag you down the tubes if you do it wrong. Ruin your credit, put you in financial disaster, throw you into bankruptcy. I'm not trying to scare people. I'm trying to say, get someone who's qualified, who isn't telling you in a TikTok video that you just do it like this, no problem. And at least get their opinion before you run off and say, I got this great video, house hacking. Look at how easy this is. You know, there's just too much of that going on. So thank you so much for at least a tidbit of house hacking. And we will run out of time if I don't start moving to the next topic. But we'll go to break and come back, of course. But when we do come back, I'm hoping that we can talk about, maybe Jess will have a preference, but first-time home buyers or a VA market, whatever we have time to get through. And these can all be, this information can all be expanded later on and whatnot. But I ate up a little bit of time with your family story because I think it's important, particularly locally, if you're going to work with somebody, although you could be working with them from anywhere, to get some sense of who they are, not just what they do.
Great. Yeah.
Real quick, I just wanted to add on to what were you saying about the 6 months you need of mortgage payments? Is that in addition to the down payment you're talking about?
It's in addition to down payment and closing costs, correct?
Reserves.
Wow.
Reserves. Yeah. Reserves. So 6 months of reserves. Because there are people, you know, what if your tenant doesn't pay?
Right.
Right. So we're all, when we're qualifying, we're looking at risk. And are you able to repay?
Let's clarify that, Angela. Is that for your single home mortgage or is that rental properties?
These are when you start to accumulate multi-families.
Right.
But it seems like if that's the case, then even though you're putting down a smaller down payment, if you're required to have that reserve, it kind of washes, doesn't it?
It could, yes. The beauty of reserves is we can use retirement money. We don't have to, doesn't have to be liquid money for reserve. It just has to be accessible in a hardship.
Okay. Let's get your phone number, Francis. In the meantime, if people have questions.
Sure. They can reach us at 413-773-3333.
Or they can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, and we have guests today. Hi.
We do. Hello. We have Angela and Mike Torville from Annie Mac Home Mortgage. And just before the break, I was asking about VA loans. And so I always found VA loans to be very interesting and very misunderstood and underexposed. And VA loans are pretty cool. So will you tell us a little bit about what that means at Annie Mac Home Mortgage?
Yeah, so VA loans are cool. So they are providing an entitlement to our veterans that have earned this. And what they've earned is to buy a home, a subsequent home, with 0% down. They don't have to be first-time home buyers. They could be on their 10th property and use their entitlement. With that said, the other really cool thing about the VA financing is, you know, people basically know if you don't put 20% down, you pay what's called PMI. VA does not charge that to their military community when they're taking advantage of these loans. And they also have some of the best interest rates. So you couldn't get a more perfect storm of zero down, top tier rating, and no PMI charging. That means the lowest payment you can probably structure for someone. Now, when they're out there shopping, sellers are seeing zero down and they're thinking they're marginal clients. Most of the time they are probably the more qualified than my individual is putting 20% down. But because they're putting zero down, they're using government financing, sellers and realtors have been conditioned to think that that's going to be a sloppy situation and it's probably not going to pass the finish line. When I've never seen a VA buyer be marginal and not anywhere close to not being able to get their financing, I could get super technical on their financing, but they struggle in the market. We always say this. If you have offers in on a house, sellers are looking at them this way: cash, conventional 20 down, government, and then people have to sell their houses to buy the new one. That's sort of the flow of what's going to be presented to a seller. Yeah. So they're going to be at the bottom of the list, even if they have the highest purchase price offer or less request to the seller due to that zero down and it being a government loan. They struggle and a lot of times are passed up, unfortunately. I've specifically heard my clients get passed up because of VA financing, which isn't even legal to say, but it's a thing.
I was just going to say that that should not be the case. In fact, it should really be the opposite. Hey, you fought for our country. You're in this benefit. Oh, I'm going to support that.
Right.
You're offering me the same price as everybody else, and you have this financing, and I know that this financing means that you're going to end up with probably more cash reserves after the mortgage is done because you didn't have to put it down on the house. You got a better interest rate, so you're probably able to make your payment okay. Oh, yeah, this seems like a good thing to me. Mike, you had something to say about this. I could see it on your face.
Well, it's a shame. It's too bad that the financing even has to be revealed. It's just too bad that it has to be, because that would certainly change things. But just once they're aware, it's unfortunate that perception's out there.
That's a very good point.
People at a disadvantage, and it's too bad, but yeah.
Yeah, and we understand that. So what we've tried to do is create other strengths to their offers. Yeah. One being me maintaining a military housing specialist certificate, so I make sure I'm educated in those financing tools. I know how to speak the language, you know, and how to read. They have special pay stubs, you know, so it's a whole different world, VA. But I make sure I'm certified and I'm well known in my community to be a part of that community. Yeah. The other thing here specifically to Annie Mac Mortgage is we have a program where we're allowing our VA buyers to place actual cash offers. So now instead of them being at the bottom of that list of offers, now they're competing with the cash offers. So that was a huge reason actually for selecting Annie Mac to power our business, is to be able to give that opportunity to that community.
We talked briefly about that in our first meeting, and I was fascinated by the fact that a mortgage company was stepping up in a way. I'm not sure you're able to disclose that, but are you able to talk about how that works, how it is that you're taking a VA loan and presenting it as a cash offer? Because I was blown away by this. You don't see this with a big box. Yeah.
Right. You don't, and you don't see it anywhere, quite honestly. And I'm a researcher, so trust me, I rejected this notion a few times before I said, wow, this is real. Yeah. So Annie Mac Mortgage has a affiliate called Annie Mac Cash to Keys, and it's an equity firm who is providing the cash for these offers. So what's happening is our VA buyers are, you know, being underwritten, of course, based on that financing requirements. And if they fit the appetite of the equity firm, then we are putting our cash up front for them. They're literally putting in cash offers. The idea behind it is that we're going to go ahead and complete that VA financing for them, and we will actually use that cash. But it's a guarantee to the seller, because regardless of the financing, we're going to purchase the home by the closing date. There's no extensions on these. So the sellers can be very confident that no matter what, when they sign on the line of our offers for our clients, they're closing. There's no mortgage requirements, and we're going to meet it.
Awesome. That's awesome.
And you might ask a question, wait, what happens if we do buy the house cash?
Mm-hmm.
where does the VA financing come in after that? Right? It's an obvious question. But the borrower, mm-hmm. the VA buyer, mm-hmm. Has 6 months to fix whatever caused the delay, and then there's a VA closing after that, which could work well for everybody, because it, depending if they need just weeks or months, we do that secondary VA closing to consummate that deal afterwards, should anything get delayed. At least the seller won't have to think about these delays. We just work that out. And there's really, as it comes down to it, there is no additional cost for this program to those borrowers.
Yeah, that I was going to say that. Yeah. It's not like somebody's yeah. making a big VIG right. in the middle, a big interest rate right. in the middle. This was something mm-hmm. somebody figured out how to do to give veterans a fair shake. Which leads me to ask you, and I don't know the answer to this, so forgive me for, putting you on the spot, but do you have any family members that are veterans and who may or may not have either had a story where they had a hard time buying a house, or they've been able to take advantage of something that helped them?
Well, my son's a veteran. He lives out in Colorado. The other son, not the one.
The other son? Yeah. Yeah. Your brother-in-law. Yeah.
Right. He lives out in Colorado, but he bought a house, but I don't think he bought it through VA.
Well, yeah. So my brother-in-law didn't use his VA benefit
yeah.
when he could have. And
right.
a lot of people who are entitled to this benefit aren't using it because of misinformation out there. And they feel like it's going to hold them back and not get the result of the home. And so they're saving their hard-earned money when they already worked hard to not put anything down, all because of, just wrong information.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
so, he didn't use it. That's a good example. But I have a great story with Annie Mac. I had a military family here in Massachusetts, and they were displaced. The family was separate. And they came back together, were living with family. They had homeless, I guess you could say, right? And I pre-approved them like you normally would with your VA benefit. So they were shopping with just a standard VA pre-approval letter, and they were getting rejected. And in one particular home, there were no other offers, and they did not want to do VA financing. The
That's
sellers.
Nice. That's just awful. Yeah.
And then we were done with our underwrite with the cash offer program, and the next house they were under contract. They had their offer accepted cash. We closed in 3 weeks. They received yeah. their deposit back at closing. They got cash back.
Wow.
And they were in the low 6% interest rate. I mean, it couldn't have been. These people were really struggling, and the whole thing, PTSD, anger management
yeah.
courses, like we're living through a very highly intense emotional journey. Mm-hmm. And to be rejected and rejected, I mean, that is a blow to anyone with someone with emotional issues too,
yeah.
is tough. So it was wonderful to be able to close them in record speed, get their offer accepted with cash,
yeah,
no fees, great rate, got cash back. I mean,
what is the resistance to accepting somebody that has a VA loan? Like, as a seller, do you get your money slower? I mean, I don't understand why there would be resistance.
Because they're putting zero down, so they feel as if the buyers aren't solvent enough to get a mortgage. It's an intricate program, and not all of us loan officers are created equal with our knowledge.
Okay.
So your pre-approval letter is good as the person's name on it, right? So.
Mm-hmm.
Big broad range of lenders out here. Not everyone knows everyone, right? Reputation's important. And also it's a government loan. So the VA does have a property standard. They want to make sure the home is healthy and safe for that military family to move into. So a big deterrent on those loans is peeling paint for lead hazard in here in Massachusetts. So if there's peeling paint, say in the home, it has to typically be corrected before we can go ahead and finish the financing. So sellers
regardless,
would take that as.
I'm sorry, Angela, regardless of the age of their children?
Yeah, it's regardless. So, it's always worst case scenario. Mm-hmm.
So that's the difference, Jess. If somebody else were just buying the home and not a VA loan, and there was peeling paint and there was lead, and they had children under a certain age, you know, then there'd be a problem. But I think what Angela is saying is, if you're a seller and you've got one person saying, well, we're going to put 20% down, and another person whose loan is 0% down, you feel like the person with 20% down is vested. They're in it. They're going to lose that money if they don't do something. So you think that that's a stronger sale, when in fact that's not necessarily the truth. Sure. I have one quick question for you about VA loans that, and again, nothing we discussed, but are VA loans still assumable? Do you know the answer to that?
Yes. Yes, they are.
So, so I will just chime in here and say that what that means is, if you're out there, let's say the interest rates are high, they're 7-8%, and somebody who's selling a home had a VA loan at 3%, guess what you can do? You can assume their mortgage at 3%, and you don't have to be a veteran to do it.
Correct. You do have to go through an underwrite.
Yep.
You do have to qualify, and you're going to go through the servicer of that loan. So you would not go get a pre-approval from someone like me. It would be a very direct thing to that property and that seller and who their servicer is of their mortgage.
Okay.
So it's not a guarantee. You still have to put a down payment. I believe there are some fees attached to that too, in addition to standard closing cost fees. But yeah, if we're looking around 7% and you find a VA seller at a 2.25%, because they're out there, that would be a great deal.
Good
yeah.
point.
But-
yeah.
So one of the reasons I said that is because when we're talking about people using their benefit and using that VA loan, that puts them in a position in the future to have a very appealing sales technique if they have a VA loan, right? They can actually say, look, you know, I'm selling my house for the same price as the next door neighbor, but my mortgage rate is at this level. And if you can qualify for it, you're stepping into a sweet deal. So,
yeah, that would be a great strategy if we turn into a buyer's market,
right?
Sellers. Yeah. I don't know how close we are to a buyer's market, but yeah, if I was a realtor, I'd be getting very well versed in that in preparation of a buyer's market.
Well, listen, in the next 30 years, while people are paying their mortgages, we're going to see buyer's markets over and over and over again, because that's what they do. They're cyclical.
We'll see.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. Angela and Mike, how do they get in touch with you?
Okay.
Well, they can always text as best, I say, 413-302-2215. Just a quick little hello and we can connect. I like to schedule calls. So just know I'll give access to my calendar and we can get you on it.
Great.
Oh, that's great. Francis, what's your phone number?
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And as always, you can go to hugyourmoney.com anytime. And we'll be back next week with another edition with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham on WHMP.